Welcome back to the Distance to Empty podcast. I am your host, Kevin Goldberg. I'm here with my co-host, Peter Noyes, and we are here to talk about 200 plus mile ultramarathons. I am coming to you fresh off of Cocodona 250. I feel like I can barely keep my eyes open. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. I had a ton of fun out there crewing you and pacing you, and I think you had an amazing performance. And what do you have to say about it?
Well, first off, it was so fun having you there. We got into some crazy antics and took away some great podcast content. And man, just having you there was so fun. But that's where the fun ended. Otherwise, it was completely miserable. I was upset the whole time. No, I'm just kidding. It was good. I think I had a good race. I continued to improve at that race. The field was just crazy competitive this year, but it was, it was a wild ride. I'm still decompressing and kind of, you know, formulating thoughts on the whole thing.
Well, I'm glad you're done because now we can both obsess over Leadville, which is our next race together.
Yes, Leadville will not be far away, and we've got lots of planning and obsessing to do, and man, that's just a fun race in Colorado. We're gonna have a blast.
All right, so what do we got today?
So today we have a really special guest. This is someone who I just recently met. We ran a lot together on night one of Cocodona, and at the time, I mean, I realized he was a really interesting person at the time, but I didn't realize like the magnitude of what was happening with his race and his whole experience. So this is a person who has hiked the full Appalachian Trail, the full Pacific Crest Trail, the full Arizona Trail, the full Continental Divide Trail. Despite all that long trail experience, this was only his second ever ultra. His first ultra being at the Eldon Crest 38 miler the previous year. So very new to ultra running, but no stranger to long trails. The kicker here is he is just 17 years old. So he ran the Cocodona 250 along with his mother, Jenny, and his brother, Ben. So all three of them signed up, and they had family and friends come from all over to crew and pace them. And not only did he run this race as a relatively new ultra runner, he absolutely knocked it out of the park, performing really well, which we'll get into with our interview with him here. But yeah, just such a great guy. Really kind of, you know, you could tell he's hungry to learn, a student of the sport already, and just approached this race in such a smart and respectful way. And I was just blown away by his attitude, and I'm really excited to jump in and you know, learn more about what makes some tips tick. So Brody Chisholm, let's go. Brody, welcome to Distance to Empty. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So as we mentioned in the intro, you literally just finished the 2024 Cocodona 250. Let's see, you and I have been finished for about 4 days now, so it's pretty fresh. I don't know if you're anything like me, but I'm still having a little hard time keeping my eyes open. I guess just kind of walk us through, like, where did you even learn about Cocodona 250? When did it enter the picture? And like, what led to you, standing on that start line in May of this year?
Yeah, so I learned about it last year, actually, pretty much at Cocodona. So I hiked the Arizona Trail with my family, and we had finished the Arizona Trail, and one of our friends picked us up, and he took us down to the start of Cocodona because we had a week or so to kill before jumping onto another trail. So we went down to the start of this ultra that is Cocodona, and we followed along for that week. We were there mostly to follow along with Josh Perry, but we followed the whole thing and just kind of learned about ultramarathons and what they're like.
So did you do the Eldon Crest last year also?
Yeah, last year, my whole family, so all five of us minus dad, jumped into the Eldon Crest 38 last year right after, well, kind of during Cocodona was going on.
So y'all just kind of signed up on a whim?
Yeah, exactly. The night before we signed up, and he threw us in there and said, sign the waivers and good luck. So we towed the line in the morning and fell in love.
That's awesome. So with your whole or many of your family doing it for this year, how did you decide to break it up? Who was going to run? Who was going to crew? Who was going to pace?
So at the start, we originally I was excited like right from the get-go. Like last year, as soon as the race was over in 2023, I was like, I am signing up. I'm so excited. I'm ready to do this. And so originally, my mom was going to be my crew chief. And then like the rest of my brothers were going to help crew and pace me. But then as things started to develop and more plans started to come together, my older brother was like, I think it'd be cool to run too. And so we were like, sweet, let's do two of us. So I would still have my mom. He would have my dad as his crew chief. And then we would kind of divvy up the rest of the family and then bring in some friends and family. And then finally, a couple months before the race, my mom was like, man, I want to as well. I wonder what I could do. This would be such a cool thing to attempt. So I want to run it too. And so we were like, okay, three of us. So we're going to have to gather some more people, gather some more friends, some more family to create three different crews. And so we just kind of looked at what we had and we made three crew chiefs. So it was, I had my dad, my older brother had my aunt and uncle, and then my mom had one of her friends. And then we just took all of our family, all of our friends, and kind of divvied them up into the different pacing sections.
So you're used to doing these long endurance trails with your family. You know, you've done the Arizona Trail, the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and you guys have done all these as a family. So what was it like sort of doing this new, perhaps, you know, in some ways more intense experience, in some ways less intense, but this ultra marathon that's 250 miles long with your mom and your brother, but sort of separately too? Like, did you keep in contact at all throughout the race, or did you just get updates from your crew and your family? Like, what was it like knowing they were out there in the field, you know, going through the same thing you were, but that you weren't physically with them?
Right. So it was definitely interesting because I was always kind of thinking about where they were, how they were doing. And so I would be kind of checking the tracker sometimes and trying to see where they were. And then we were all in like a group chat with all of our crews and everything. And so like we'd get the text from our crew, like doing great, doing amazing. And sometimes it would be a text from like my dad, and then my brother and mom would see that, or it'd be a text from someone else's crew and I would see it. And so I could just kind of like keep tabs on them and know where they were based off of what I could see in the group chat, and then obviously the tracker when I checked it.
So Eldon Crest was the longest run you've ever done, right? The 38 miles?
Yeah, that was the longest run I had done previously.
And even before Eldon Crest, was running ever part of your training for through hiking?
For through hiking, a little bit. So I run track and cross country. And so before these trails, I would oftentimes be running track. But I would run track more for the races and like track events rather than training. But it was definitely good training to get me in shape.
Okay. Yeah, that explains a lot. And then for the Cocodona this year, how did your training really change to focus on this 250-mile distance?
So initially, we started out doing more of a through hiking base because there's a lot of hiking, power hiking that goes into these ultras. And so we went out there and we actually through hiked, technically, the Cocodona course, minus the private sections of land. And so we through hiked that. So just had our full gear, bags and everything. So like the bag weighed 20 to 30 pounds. And we would do like 25-ish miles a day to get our legs in shape for hiking. And then once we finished that, we had about a week or two until Cocodona. And so we were up around the Grand Canyon and we brought our vests with us. So we would do some runs then to get our legs in shape for running.
What about the mental prep leading into this? Like you're obviously no stranger to long days and nights on the trail, but you have always had your family with you, never sort of, you know, going through that alone. Like in the weeks and days leading up to Cocodona, did you find yourself And the answer, it's probably a mix of these things, but like, were you more nervous, anxious, excited? And I ask this because, so you and I spent a good chunk of time together on night one, you know, hiking and running together. And one thing that really impressed me, or one thing that I really noticed, was just kind of how calm and collected you were and how efficiently you were moving. And I'll be honest, some of the questions you were asking me were just blew me away, because, well, not even just your age, but just your lack of experience in a race like this, you know, like forget that you're 17 years old, just like the fact that you're running a 200 for the first time, not even, and an ultra for the second time, like, you know, so I guess, yeah. What was your like mindset going into this thing?
It was before the race, I was definitely more excited than anything. And then, I was relaxed, but knowing that like the distance isn't unbearable. Like I do, like I have these efforts, I mean, through hikes that aren't as high intensity for that amount of time, but they're long distance things. And so I knew that I could cover the distance. And then I was fairly confident in how I had prepared my body. And then I was just trying to have fun. Like, I mean, I'm pretty lucky to be able to do something like this. And so I was just excited to meet people, excited to run with people. And so I just wanted, and then also I like knew nothing. So I just wanted to gain as much knowledge as I could from experienced people. And so that's why I loved running with you, Kevin, for so long on that first day. And I just asked you so many questions because I just wanted to gain all the knowledge I could that would help me in this race. And then obviously in the future.
Well, it was my pleasure. I think at one point I forget exactly what you said, something like, I'm really chatty, so just let me know if you want to stop. And I was like, no, man, bring it on. More we can chat, the better it is for both of us, the way I see it.
And what about like experience with technology and through hiking? I'm curious, things like, you know, smartwatches where we have GPX tracks and all that. Are those things that you were already accustomed to in through hiking, or did you have a steep learning curve figuring out how to approach a race like this?
So I use my phone a lot. I use Gaia GPS a lot for hiking, for through hiking, specifically on the Continental Divide Trail. I would have to like download different maps and different routes. So I knew all about that on my phone, and I was confident using like the GPX track that Cocodona had. And then smartwatch, I always have my smartwatch with me on the through hikes. So I didn't end up using it for like the course map during Cocodona. I just used my phone for that. So I knew everything going into the race.
So Brody, you mentioned when we were running together on night one, it was kind of a quick mention, not even sure if you remember saying it, but you said something about having a secret time goal that was just for you. And it's worth noting here that not only did you, you know, run Cocodona and just complete it, you competed. You were, you know, your time was competitive. In any previous year, it would have been a podium time or a top 10 time, top 5 time, excuse me. You know, I think it's the reality of this race that it's getting more and more competitive. So this was by far the most competitive year, and you still, you know, finished in 12th place early Thursday morning in a very great spot. So can you let us know what that secret goal of yours that you had and how close you came to it?
Yeah, so my main goal was to get the course record. So that would have been 69 hours for McKnight set that last year. And so that was my main goal. And then other than that, I had obviously looked at like the 72-hour mark and then the 75-hour mark. And so those were kind of my main goals. And so I pretty much got the 75-hour mark. And then looking back, there are a few things that I would definitely change and do differently that I think would have allowed me to get closer to that 69-hour course record time, well, previous course record time. But I'm fairly happy with the performance and the time that I got.
Sounds like we had very, very similar goals and sort of a similar experience of like, I'm mostly happy too with how things shook out. You know, there's just as you got a very quick learning experience on, there's just so many variables in these races, and it's so hard to juggle everything at once and very few people have a perfect race at something like this. But I mean, still, like, you know, as I'm sure you've seen from the outpouring of support and admiration on from Cocodona and on the social channels, just like how amazing everyone, you know, amazed everyone is at your performance. So well done.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you have any standout memories from your time on the course?
All of them?
Yeah, right. I have a few. One great one. Well, two great ones, one not so good one. So I'll start with the not so good one. And it was at mile 78 Whiskey Row. I went to take a nap. And I had slowed down that last mile and a half or two to let my body kind of relax a little bit. And I laid down, couldn't sleep. And then all of a sudden I felt like I was going to get sick. And so I yelled for my crew to like get like a kind of like a copper bucket kind of thing. And then all of a sudden I was just throwing up. And it was the first time that I had like experienced that while running. And I mean, I had heard about a lot of people having stomach problems and not being able to keep stuff down, but first time I had experienced it, and I just wanted to kind of curl up in a ball and not move and not do anything, but I kind of had to just suck it up and get up and try to keep some food down and keep moving forward. So that was definitely a memory that I'm going to keep with me for a while. And so that was the bad one. And then one of the great ones was when I had my little brother Elliot pacing me. And we were at Walnut Canyon, so 229 or something like that. And I had just passed McKnight, and we had put like 3 miles on him.
Hold on, I just want to interrupt you. So we have do you realize like what you just said?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're and nothing against McKnight. McKnight's an incredible, you know, one of the best to ever race this distance.
Yes.
And, you know, no disrespect to McKnight, but we're talking to someone who's running his second ultra and just casually saying, and I just passed McKnight at Walnut Canyon. Anyway, continue. Sorry, I had to kind of highlight that the gravity of that sentence.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. When I caught him, I was like, wow, this is something else. But I got to Walnut Canyon and I was picking up my little brother pace, and he was like, let's go. And so we took like 10 or 15 minutes at Walnut Canyon getting ready for the last push, and we just took off running, and I felt like the miles were moving by fast, and we were doing like 10 minute miles for like an hour, a little over an hour. And I was kind of watching the tracker to see if McKnight had left the aid station yet. And I just kind of saw the gap growing and growing and growing until finally we got to the base at Eldon, and we had like a 9 or 10 mile lead on him. And that was kind of the moment where I was like, wow, I could actually pull this off and get a great time and beat one of like the main inspirations for coming to Cocodona. So
that's awesome.
That was one of my favorite memories.
So you, you know, just seeing your, obviously just becoming familiar with your family in the very recent history, in the very recent past here, you all seem so supportive of each other. And obviously you spent tons of time on trail. I'm curious to what level, if any, there is like a friendly, you know, competitive spirit between you guys. Like, are you motivated by your little brother? Because like, even though you've gone 230 miles, like you need to keep up with him. You know, are you trying to beat your brother, Ben? To what extent is there that friendly level of competition, or is it truly just all, you know, support, which would be cool too? Both would be great answers.
Definitely a lot of support. Like I only want to see them succeed ever. And, but there's definitely a friendly competitiveness between all of us. Like even my mom was competitive with Ben, was competitive with me, but I was definitely checking the tracker, seeing how close Ben was getting to me, or if I was starting to put a little bit of a gap on him. And then Elliot, my little brother Elliot, when I picked him up to pace me for those, I mean, he ended up pacing like 85 miles. But every time I would get him, I would be like, man, I got to keep up with him. Even though his legs are more fresh than mine. I got to keep up with them. And then when he started to run, I would pick it up and start running with them. And I didn't want him to see any weakness, just so that he doesn't get any ideas to come beat any of my times.
So we talked a little bit about mental toughness, but just curious about, you know, with some of these long through hikes you've done, like Pacific Crest Trail, are there any like similarities in terms of lows you've experienced on a trail like that, or where you had to overcome, and were you able to apply any of those lessons or take any of that mental training in Kokodona?
Yeah. In the through hikes, like, it's every day there's a little bit of a low to the day. And then sometimes there's lows for like multiple days on end. Like on the Pacific Crest Trail in Oregon, the mosquitoes were so bad that we couldn't even stop, or we would just get eaten alive. And so we would stop twice a day, and we would hike for 15, 16 hours a day. And so it's just like getting your mind to kind of get in line with your body and just go and go and go and go and realize like there is no stopping until the end of the day definitely helped. So that when I was in Kokodona and my body was telling me, man, this hurts. We've been going for 24, 48, 72 hours. Like, I was just like, no, we got to keep going, keep going, keep going. The finish line is coming up.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to see the sort of two camps of like people who have found success at this race. I mean, there's obviously the pure runners, the endurance athletes who have been, you know, doing this for a very long time. And you've seen those people have incredible success. I mean, you know, Harry Sabuertas, he's in the other bucket. Jeff Browning is who I meant, Mike McKnight. And then there's this other like bucket of people, Jeff Garmeyer, Stringbean McConaughey, Josh Perry, who have found a ton of success in these races as well. Do you think, I mean, obviously for now you fall into that through hiking bucket, which does seem to have uniquely prepared you for the challenges, the highs and lows of this event. Like, do you think we'll continue to see that sort of the two different types of athletes in this race? Or do you think we'll find like eventually they'll rise like a super hybrid of the two that can do better than either of them?
I think eventually there'll be a super hybrid. And I think that you're more likely to find it with someone like McKnight or Browning. If they really honed in their hiking skills, they could be even better than they are. But I think that it could also go the other way, in that if a hiker-based like runner focused a little bit more on their running as well, they could definitely become unstoppable.
Yeah, and that was another takeaway I had from spending some miles with you on night one, was like, I consider myself a very strong hiker. You know, I have one of the faster times up Eldon that late in the race. I can always push and be efficient on flat terrain, usually getting under 15 minute miles hiking. Yeah. And your hiking was just beautiful. I mean, it was like one of the most efficient things I've ever seen. I was jealous, like in real time. So that was pretty cool to see, man.
Yeah, thank you. I gotta say though, my brother, he tops my hiking. You wouldn't believe it, but he went up Eldon in like 40 minutes. Whew. At the end of a 250-mile race. So,
yeah, that's a good time fresh.
Got to give him props.
And so to circle back on, we had your brother Ben and your mom Jenny, and all of you guys finished, correct?
Yeah, all of us finished.
So we mentioned a little bit about the kind of that support systems that you all had. So can you kind of go into a little more detail of the different crews that each of you had throughout the race, who was there and what their roles were during the race, and like, you know, what kind of effect that had on you and your family?
Yeah. So for me, I had my dad as my crew chief. I had my little brother Elliot as kind of my main pacer. So I just gave him all of like the hardest sections, or the sections I knew I was going to be running the fastest. And then I had my cousin William, who I also used for a lot of pacing sections. And that was my main crew. And so I mostly stuck with them. And then I took a few people from my mom's crew or my brother's crew would come and pace me for like one section. And then I would set Elliot, I think, paced my brother. Elliot paced Ben for like one section at the very beginning. So we kind of shared people a little bit, but for the most part, I stuck with Elliot as my main pacer and my cousin William helping me mostly.
So did you have pacers the entire time you were allowed to have pacers?
Yeah, I had pacers for every mile I was allowed to.
And it sounds like you were strategic in who you chose to pace when, you know, depending on the section. Can you go into a little more detail about those choices?
Yeah, I definitely thought it out like a lot, and I kind of looked at different climbs, what time of day I'd be going through that section, and then also like who do I want when. So like maybe going through the night, I'd rather have Elliot because he's going to push me hard and he can always make me like laugh and talks to me like all the time. And so that's good to keep me awake. And then I would put William at a place where there would be a more like kind of rolly section. Can't really run it, but it's not a super steep hike. I'd kind of put him there and then he would also talk to me all the time. And so I would kind of look at the elevation profile and then what time I'd be going through, and I would choose who I thought fit best.
So with that level of like the planning and detail and kind of sort of like strategic planning, I know for a fact that there's some people who go through these races with none of that. Like there's none of that strategic planning. They're just kind of winging it. When they get out there, they'll throw stuff at the wall and hope that it sticks. You know, at 17 years old, where did you get that from? Like, is that something that you guys do together as a family when you plan your through hikes? Is that more like you just became such a fan of this race that you sort of like worked your way into planning it from that? Like, how did you get to a place where you were so strategic?
So for the through hikes, we definitely, when we're going to through hike something, we always look at it. We check it over thoroughly and look at the different sections so we kind of know what to expect. But this planning was definitely way more in depth, and I think that it was just because of excitement. I just wanted to. I focused. I couldn't get Cocodona off my mind, and so I had time. So I was like, I'm gonna figure out exactly what sections I want people where I want people, and what sections are gonna be the most challenging, and then personalities where I want them, and so I just spent hours, me and Elliot mostly, spent hours just figuring out where we would put the pacers and what we thought would work best.
So finishing 12th, you know, in the most competitive year ever is an amazing accomplishment, you know, for anybody, but especially as someone so new to the sport and at your age. So, you know, I think with your secret time goal, you kind of answered this, but like, did you expect that you would do so well against this field?
I believed that I could do very well. I didn't know where it would land me because I knew that there were people that were coming back for their fourth year, like Garmeyer, that were going to be up in the front. And then I also didn't know how these insane 100-mile runners were going to do. And so I knew that I could be competitive and that it would land me a good spot. I just did not know where that would be. And so 12th was a pleasant surprise.
Well, you know, you said you had that secret goal. How secret was it? Did you tell friends and family? And if so, what was their reaction to like when you told them that that's what you thought you were going to do, that's what you wanted to do? How did they react to that?
Few of them were skeptical. They're like, I don't know, this is pretty aggressive. But then a few, like Elliot was like, let's do this. And Elliot believed in me. He was like, we're going to do everything we can. And we're going to just get you to that finish line in the time that you want. And so it was kind of a split reaction. Half thought that it was like great and totally attainable. And then half were kind of like, we'll see. That's pretty aggressive.
I feel like that's kind of the tell of a good goal, though, right? Like if it was, you know, you kind of want it to be split, because if it was too much to one side, then maybe you're either being too soft or too aggressive. If you're split in the room, then you might be right where you want to be.
Right.
So I wanted to ask you kind of what motivates you, you know, and this is, I don't want to keep harping on the age, because at the end of the day, I think you're just a badass athlete, regardless of how old you are. But like at 17 years old, like what motivates you to push the limits of like human endurance? Is it something like, what do you think, it was a cognizant choice you've made, or is it part of your upbringing and just like part of the fiber of who you are?
A little bit of both. My whole life I've been competitive, and I've just wanted to be the best at everything I've done. I found that mostly in running, because running is mostly an individual sport. It's kind of just you decide how good or how bad you're going to do, and then you push yourself to attain your goals. And so my whole life I've just kind of strived to do as best I can. And so when I took on Code Ladona, it's no different. I was going to just push myself as hard as I possibly could. And then obviously I wanted to make sure that my crew was aware of that and that they were going to help me to do just that. And so they definitely did, cutting some sleep short, getting me out of aid stations faster. When I wanted to hike, sometimes they were like, no, we're running. And so they definitely helped me push myself, but it's just kind of how I am and how I want to be.
So I guess with your running, you said you do track and cross country.
Yeah.
How does the competition there compare to what the competition was like in Code Ladona? I imagine it's a very different thing, you know, if your race lasts, you know, 50 seconds or 5 minutes, you know, compared to, you know, a race that lasts 70 plus hours. So like, how can you compare and contrast the competition between different types of events?
Yeah. So for track, I run the mile. And so that event will take me 4.5 minutes, and the whole time is mostly right on someone's shoulder, or someone's right on your shoulder, and you're pushing, just battling for those few minutes, and then you sprint at the very end and hope that it's enough to hold them off. And in Code Ladona, I felt like there was a lot more of a relaxed feeling for the first half, for me at least. But then I started to feel like I was racing in more of a shorter distance event, trying to hold people off or gain the few miles ahead of me to catch somebody. And so in a lot of ways they're similar. Just one happens over the course of days and one happens over the course of minutes. And then in a lot of ways, I feel like they're totally, totally different because of the relaxed feeling I had in the first half.
I really like the first like day of the races too, because it's, no matter how much you've hyped it up beforehand, like there is a sense of relief that you're just like, all right, we're off and moving. Like it is kind of chill for the first while. There's not as much jockeying. And if there is, you're probably making a mistake. Like it's probably too early for that. So it's like this sort of calm before the storm, even though the storm is raging all around you.
Yep.
You know, so I guess 4 or so days now removed from the race, like what are your big takeaways? Like what's the narrative you're telling yourself? And does that differ from, you know, what your brother and mom are feeling at all?
I'm excited for what's next. And now that I know that I can, I can do this, and that I can be competitive at this, I'm telling myself and realizing that like anything is possible at this point. And then I'm not exactly sure what my brother or mom's takeaways are, but I'm guessing they feel confident knowing that they can take on something as challenging as this and overcome it and keep moving forward.
So what is next for you? Have you already started planning out, you know, future races, or are you still finishing up, you know, track, or what's the future look like next couple of years?
I still am not exactly sure. I There's a couple of 100-mile races that I'm going to want to end up doing just to see what I can do at that distance. But then eventually I'm going to want to come back to the 200-mile distance. I don't know if that's in a year or 2 years or what it is, but eventually I'll want to race more 200s and see what kind of times I can get.
That's awesome. And one of the benefits of getting into this so early is you've got all the time in the world to kind of be really smart about it and strategic, which it sounds like you got a good head for that. There's definitely a lack of youth in this sport, and that's something that like String Bean has really kind of focused on. I don't know if you've seen his All In Trail Collective, where he kind of mentors and coaches, you know, youth athletes who might not have the resources or desire to kind of get into this long distance running. Like, what's your take on that, and what advice would you give to someone who's in their teens or maybe early 20s who is, you know, having a hard time wrapping their head around doing something like this?
Well, I think that there should be more younger athletes. And then I think that obviously these races need to set an age requirement for safety. But there's people that are trying to get into it, like younger kids that are trying to get into it. There's always something you can do. Like there's 24-hour challenges, there's shorter races, there's unlimited opportunities if you truly want to go after this. And then I would just say, just do your best. I feel like there wasn't a ton of pressure. Everyone saw a 17-year-old and was like, huh, maybe he'll finish, maybe he won't. And then they were like, if he does finish, I doubt he's getting 75 hours. And so I just used the lack of pressure to my advantage and just went out there and had fun. And I had my own goals, but I didn't let anyone else, there was no sort of pressure to be the best. So that definitely helped.
Man, I love that. That's really awesome. And that's such a cool, like, that you can actually take that away from this is only going to make you stronger next time.
Yeah.
Let's get into some listener questions. So we put out a call on Instagram today for some questions, and we actually got like 40 of them.
Okay.
So I'm going to cherry pick some of these. Some of them we've touched on. A lot of them have to do with homework because people think they're hilarious. But let's start with sleep. So Lisette 90 asked, how many naps did you take? How long did you sleep?
Okay. I don't have the exact number of naps I took. I slept for an hour and a half. So an hour and a half for the 75 hours. I know that I didn't take sleep longer than 20 minutes. And I took two dirt naps. One was 3 minutes with Elliot at mile 135, I want to say. And one of them was with my cousin William at mile 158, and that was 10 minutes long. So I did better than I thought I would with sleep. That was mostly what I was kind of worried about, or the big unknown for me was what I was going to do sleeping, which is why most of my questions, Kevin, in the first bit that we hiked together were about sleep. But I did a lot better than I thought I was going to, and I think that it worked out well. My crew was interesting about sleep. I came into Fort Tuthill, I was pretty tired, and so I was like, hey, I want to sleep. I want like 30 minutes. And they were like, okay. Then they looked at the tracker. McKnight was 3 miles ahead of me. A couple other guys were like 5, 6, 7 miles ahead of me. And I feel like I was in 20th place. And they were like, okay, 30 minutes, got it. They laid me down, woke me up 30 minutes later, which was really 15 minutes, and said, get out the door. And so they even then was just kind of an example of them pushing me to get the better spot. But overall sleep, hour and a half, and I would say probably like between 5 and 7 naps.
Awesome. Sounds like it went pretty darn well for your first go at sleeping in an ultra. Austin wants to know, What other activities and sports are your friends doing, and are you participating in any of those outside of running?
So hockey. I play hockey for my high school, and then even though I'm homeschooled, I'm able to participate because I live in the town.
Let's see. Oh, how this is from Nor'easterner. I'm assuming that you've done this, then maybe that this person knows that you've done this. How has the New Hampshire 48 4,000 footers prepared you for COCO?
So most people think of the White Mountains as these little 4,000 foot mountains that aren't anything tough, but most of these trails have at least 1,000 feet of gain per mile, and they're just huge rocks everywhere. So climbing these mountains here in New Hampshire has just toughened up everything, toughened up my legs, and then the mental side of it, just going straight up and straight down, and just feeling a constant burn for those few miles till you get to the top has definitely prepared me well.
Yeah, no, New Hampshire is no joke. I've done the Presidential Traverse up there. I've done Mount Washington. Those are like much bigger mountains than they look like on paper.
Yeah, definitely.
If you had to say, Smarte24 wants to know if it was harder mentally or physically.
I would say mentally, but I had really focused on getting my body in shape. And then I can tell that my body was definitely in shape, because now I'm considering going back out for a run tomorrow. So like my body feels fine. My body feels good. And then there were just times in the race where I was like, man, I'm only a mile 97. I have over 150 miles to go. And I was throwing up 20 miles ago. This is tough. So I would say mentally.
Man, I saw you running when your mom finished. I saw you and your family running her in. And I was like, he's moving pretty good for someone who finished less than 48 hours ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it was – my body was pretty good with the recovery process.
Yeah. So on that recovery sort of trend, Helgi asks how many calories per hour you ate or shot for, and kind of what was the combination of calories. So just, can you speak a little bit to your like nutrition plan, and if it went to plan or if it was kind of just winging it? What did food look like for you during the race?
Yeah, so I had no plan. I didn't really know exactly what to do. I had kind of made, I had made baggies for each section with calories in it. And I had set aside like 200 calories an hour that I would carry with me from aid station to aid station. But after the first 95 miles, the whole strategy went out the window, because I just wasn't eating the amount of calories that I had set aside for myself. And so towards the middle to end of the race, I would get to an aid station and I would be able to drink like a protein calorie drink. That would go down easy. And then I would also eat whatever I could at the aid station. And I would guess, depends on which one, between 1,000 and 2,000 calories at each aid station, which was insane that I was able to keep it down. But I would do that. And then oftentimes I would eat like only a few hundred calories between the next, in the next stretch till I got to an aid station. And then once I got to the aid station, drink the protein calorie drink, and then eat as much as I could, and then just repeat the process.
Yeah, we did our last episode before, well, our most recent episode that's out right now was with a nutritionist or a dietitian, Dina Griffin, and we talked about like what happens to your body when you take in like 1 to 2,000 calories and then like continue. And it's pretty fascinating. Nothing good happens.
Yeah.
At least in the short term. In the long term, it's necessary, but right. It's a pretty intense to throw that much food in,
yeah,
and then continue moving. But you kind of have to for these crazy events. Haynes Endurance wants to know you did drop your mile time, but what are your cross country times, and have you been reached out to by sponsors yet?
So I'll do, well, my mile time is 4:30. My 2 mile time is 9:45, and then my 5K is 16 minutes, and then I I've been reached out to by a few different people from a few different companies, and then at the end of the race, I did get some shoes from Run Speedland. So
nice,
yeah.
I got some shoes, Speedland shoes at the end too, but they're two different sizes.
Really?
Yeah, I got 1 12 and a half and 1 12. I messaged them. I'm sure they'll make it right. But I just thought that was funny. We were probably both so tired then.
Yeah.
He's just like, here, take these 12 and a halves. And then I was putting the carbon plates in. And I was like, wait a minute. Something's not adding up. Yeah. And then I looked and it was sure enough. So that's funny. Cool. Let's see if there's any else here. I don't want to ask you all these ones about homework. Wear Sunscreen wants to know if you've heard about the Arizona Monster 300. Is that on your radar?
I have heard about it. I think that I would run Cocodona a few more times before doing that.
Okay. I looking at the course, I suspect that even though it's 300 miles, it's easier than Cocodona.
Yeah. Well, it looked like there was a good amount of like flat kind of bike route miles. And then also it's a lot of it is the Arizona Trail.
Yeah.
And so I've already hiked the Arizona Trail. So I would know what the course is, so that would help me. But also I think that I'd rather race these courses that I haven't seen yet before I do that.
Yeah. No, I think that makes total sense. Like, I don't know, Bigfoot, Tahoe, Moab, like they're really beautiful, like really beautiful parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. And with your hiking chops, Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Seriously, you'd crush Bigfoot. All right, let's do one more from Instagram and then we'll wrap things up with our quick five questions. So I'll just say personally, cause I get this question a lot, like it's okay if you don't have one of these. I sometimes feel like I don't have one. Ultra Birch wants to know, what is your why and did it change at all during the race?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I just wanted to see what I could do. I just wanted to, I thought that it would be fun and wanted to be competitive and see how I could compete against the best in the world.
Cool. All right. So we end these podcasts with a quick five questions. So this is kind of just like whatever comes to mind first, no right or wrong answers, rapid fire. Let's do... not just in Cocodona, but you can answer for like on long trails too. So if you have an experience or something from one of your long hike, you can use that as well. I'll kick it off. So what's been your highest high during a 200 or on the long trails?
I would say when I got to the top of Eldon and knew that I only had 8.5 miles to go and it was all downhill and I got to finish with my brother.
All right. Lowest low.
Well, I was in the back of our crew vehicle throwing up at mile 80.
To go along with throwing up, what was your favorite food for 200? What did you eat the most of?
I ate the most of the pasta with meatballs at Fort Tuthill.
I think Peter fed me that. Like actually, like was did you is that what you fed me?
Yes.
Yeah. So who's the real 17-year-old on this call?
All right. Favorite piece of gear for a 200?
I would go with my poles.
And Brody, this one's the easiest question we've asked you yet. Obviously, we all know the answer to it, but it's how we end the podcast every time. Have you found your distance to empty yet?
I would say no, actually.
Yeah, that's how most people answer.
Yeah.
I think you're still out there looking and you've got time to find it.
Yep.
Brody, thanks for joining us. This was really, really fun.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, that was a really fun chat with Brody. I agree. He's so mature for his age. And I can't help think about our coach, Nicodemus, who was, I think maybe had a similar start. You know, he was the youngest to do Badwater and all these things. So I really can't wait to follow Brody's journey. I feel like we're at the start of something amazing with them.
Yeah, agreed. I'm stoked to follow you, whatever is next for you, Brody. And thanks for sharing miles with me and keeping me company. And congrats again on your epic race.
So for performance of the week this week, I can't see how we can give it to anyone else but Brody. I mean, 12th at Cocodona, amazing time, 75 hours. just kudos and congratulations.
Yeah, I think it could go out to the whole Chisholm family. You know, their mom, Jenny, finished as well. Ben had a strong finish. And I apologize, Chisholm family. I don't know all of your names. I think Asher and Elliot were pacers and brothers. But yeah, just, you know, incredible job out there. And just, you know, what an inspiration to anyone who had the pleasure of following along.
Agreed. All right. So snack review. What do we have, Kevin?
This snack nearly killed me. I don't know if it's because I'm so close off of Cocodona. Maybe my mouth is still a little raw, but whatever this is, it's hella spicy and it really got me.
Yeah. So that was really fun for me just now. It looks like it's some sort of ghost pepper Lay's from Thailand. It has a big Max on the title, but yeah, these are quite spicy, and I know you don't like spicy food, Kevin, so watching you eat that was I feel a little bad for you, but also that was fun for me. But
I had like half a chip and I'm still dying, and it was like not even a full chip.
Yeah, there's no way that these would work in a race. This would be torture for it would be.
I mean, maybe if you were on the brink of like falling asleep, like, and you needed to stay awake and you like hammered a bunch of these, they'd like, your mouth would be so on fire, you'd have to stay awake.
Maybe that's the only way these would do anything.
Yeah, I don't know. That was quite an experience. So yeah, if you are looking for a spicy ultra snack, these Lay's Max ghost pepper chips from Thailand from Galactic Snacks might be right up your alley. All right, Peter, since you didn't do this earlier, and our fans are going to be disappointed if they don't get one, do you want to maybe say something that shifts into something to get to our next category here?
Maybe we should switch gears here and play that favorite game that we all love.
Yeah, let's switch gears. Let's play Let's Get Deep, which is a card game for couples that Peter and I play on the pod. So there's three categories: icebreaker, deep, and deeper. Higher levels of intimacy as you go, and Peter and I will interview each other and ask questions on the pod. I'll kick it off, Peter, with your icebreaker. What is your favorite thing to do on a fall day? You're in LA. There's no such thing as a fall day.
Actually, that's not entirely true. My favorite thing to do on a fall day is go apple picking. So my family and I, we have an annual tradition of going up to Yucaipa, up like 4,000 feet elevation where the apples grow, and we pick apples, buy apples, drink cider, buy pies. A lot of fun.
That does sound lovely.
I'll take you sometime. All right.
I can't wait.
Your icebreaker: too hot or too cold? Why?
Too cold. I think I would just rather be too cold. I feel like I have more control over being too cold. I can do things about it, and I just do not do well in the heat. I get so hot. I sweat so much, and you can only wear so much moth tech from Satisfy. You just, you know, you can't stay any cooler. For those of you who might not know what moth tech is, it is a groundbreaking technology from Satisfy Running, and I begged for a free moth tech Cocodona shirt at the Fane Ranch Satisfy aid station at Cocodona this year. Absolutely begged, and I got one, and it's like $140 essentially cotton t-shirt, which is now the favorite thing that I own. Deep for you. What is your favorite picture of me and why?
I think my favorite picture of you, it's like a selfie you sent me. You know, I think for fun, I had it printed out as your employee of the month. And I don't know, you've never had a mustache, but for some reason you have a mustache in the selfie, and you just have a very serious expression on your face. And it's just, I don't know, I love that picture.
I don't think I've ever had a mustache for longer than it's the time it's taken to take a picture. I usually just, like, when I'm shaving, I'll just take a picture and then it's gone.
All right, deep for you. What childish thing do you still enjoy? Why?
Well, I still play video games, but I feel like those are only viewed as childish because they are like, they came into existence like for our generation, you know? Like, I think you're going to see more and more adults playing video games now that like it's been part of their lives for their whole lives. So that's what first comes to mind. My diet is pretty childish. My behavior on night 3 of a 200 is pretty childish. Yeah, I mean, it seems feels like I could just keep going with this list.
All right.
How on a scale of 1 to 10, how embarrassing was I at Hookedona?
I mean, honestly, it was just fun to be a part of. Definitely you hit some lows, but I wouldn't classify it as embarrassing. It's just those things are hard. I think we all get like that out there.
Yeah. All right. Well, that made me feel, I guess, kind of good. Is it my turn?
It is. Yeah.
Oh, I'm having a hard time between the spicy chips and the not sleeping since May 6th. I'm having a hard time here. Deeper for you. What is the, I don't even know why I'm laughing. What is the most meaningful and or impactful thing you received from your partner? This is hard because I give you gifts. Like you have like an IV stream of gifts from me.
I think my favorite gift from you, I'll go with that ridiculous mask that you gave me, just because when I opened that, it was just completely out of left field. And it's just been a lot of fun, like wearing it around the house, surprising everyone that comes in, and then, yeah, bringing it to Cocodona and pulling it out, you know, coming out of Jerome. That was pretty epic.
My favorite part was that guy who did not, like, I don't think he realized you were wearing a mask. And like, I to keep this podcast at least PG-13, I won't explain the mask in detail, but it's a inappropriate and very obviously a mask. And Peter wore it going into Jerome, Dead Horse, and someone was there greeting us and it was just like, nice work. And I said something like, man, a lot of weirdos out here. And the guy was just like, well, only a weirdo would run 250 miles and like totally treated Peter in that mask like he was a normal functioning member of society.
Yeah, I hope it was a not wearing their glasses type of problem. All right. Deeper for you. What's the bravest thing you've ever done?
The bravest thing I've ever done. I don't know. I live a pretty soft life, it seems. I've gone shark diving twice, but I think sharks are gentle giants and that's not particularly brave. Yeah. I don't know. I've never gone back into a fire to save my pets or anything. I may, maybe I would if I had the opportunity, but so far I've been lucky.
That's fair. Well, we're both tummy ache survivors, so that's pretty brave.
I survived one last week on day one of the race, barely. That was pretty brave. You're right. Thank you for reminding me. I'll go with that. All right. Well, hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode. I think Brody's, you know, just such a cool dude, and I'm so stoked we were able to chat with him on here. If you are a new listener, maybe you learned about us at Cocodona this year, please, please, please give us a review. We'd love to read reviews. They help the podcast grow. They help us continue creating these for you guys. So, you know, takes maybe 30 seconds, go to Apple, go to Spotify, leave us a review, give us a follow or subscribe if you haven't already. Our plan here is to, you know, do some Cocodona wrap up episodes, talk to some cool people, and then shift things over to Tahoe. We have a cool guest lined up for a Tahoe preview course for anyone who's running Tahoe 200, and we'll create some extra Tahoe 200 content, which is coming up here pretty quickly. My wife Melanie is going to be running Tahoe. I will be out there, so if anyone is also going to be out there, let us know, and we can maybe link up for a shakeout run or just a chat, hang out. Anything else to say to our wonderful listeners, Peter?
Just thanks for listening. It's been a ton of fun. Can't wait to share more 200s with you all throughout this year.
Wow, that was so beautiful, Peter.
Little cheer.
Well, I'm feeling a little slap happy. Sorry, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.